Mew, flexing as she pursued it. "Cage! Wake up!" "I'm not asleep." The path before her writhed, a serpent in mortal pain, knotting in on itself, and still she followed it, down into the convolutions of the sigil.
"Cage!"
Nona opened an eye.
"I was worried!"
Ara was leaning over her, so close her hair fell all about Nona's face, tickling her neck. She pulled back. Nona turned her head. Ara was kneeling on the bed, fully dressed. All the other beds lay empty, the dormitory deserted and full of slanting sunlight.
"Where is everyone?"
The sigil still burned across her vision.
"Breakfast, then Blade."
Ara got off the bed. "You need to get up and dress right away." She paused, leaning forward.
"Unless you need to go to Sister Rose. Jula thought we should fetch her. Most of them just thought it was funny when you wouldn't get up, but Jula said you might be ill."
"She's not gone to—"
"No. I said I'd fetch Sister Rose if I couldn't wake you up. Then Hessa said she thought you were ill too, but that it was Sister Pan we should be sending for. She said there was something wrong with you, but that it might be a path working. She said she would go to Sister Pan after breakfast if you didn't show up."
"You spoke my name," Nona said.
"My chosen one."
Ara bit her lip.
"I thought it might help. I tried everything else."
She looked slightly guilty.
"You'll want to dry your face, and your pillow's a bit wet." "You threw water on me?"
"Twice, and I pulled your hair. Oh, and you've got nail marks on your arm where I pinched you." Nona sat up, wiping her face on her blanket.
"Lucky the name worked. Sounds like in another minute you'd be setting my hair on fire or trying a kiss like that prince in the old story."
Ara looked quickly down at her feet.
"You didn't!"
Nona jumped out of bed, reaching for her skirts. Ara flashed a grin.
"It would have been the first thing Clara tried."
Nona frowned, tugging off her nightdress and wriggling into her underskirts.
"Where is Clara? Didn't she have an opinion?"
"She did." Ara handed Nona her habit.
"Her opinion was that you were fine, and if we were late for Blade, Sister Tallow would skin us. Or worse, leave us behind when the Kaltus forging came."
"She's not wrong there." Nona jammed her feet into her shoes and started to run for the door.
"Hurry up! I'm starved!"
Nona devoured her breakfast and ran to her first lesson, still chewing over her nighttime encounter. Yisht's sigil had sent her to her bed, and a slumber so deep she almost didn't wake from it. But what could she tell the nuns? What evidence did she have? The Emperor's own sister had sent the woman, and she seemed to have license to do whatever she pleased. Even if Yisht admitted to sigil work, she'd just say it was to warn her of threats to Zol. The remainder of the week was given over to Blade, much to the disgust of Mistress's path, academia, and spirit. Mistress Shade confessed herself relieved to have a break from the thick-wittedness of novices, and vowed to spend the time brewing a new toxin that she would be requiring test subjects for on their return. Sister Tallow drilled Grey Class without mercy, sending them aching to their beds each night. She used Zol and her repertoire of unfamiliar combat styles to wake the novices to the idea that the Kaltus fighters would not come at them using forms they knew.
"Nona and Zol,"
Sister Tallow waved them together. The meeting had been inevitable. Zol straightened, wiping sweat-soaked hair from her eyes. Sand coated half her face from where Ara had at last managed to throw her to the ground. It had been Ara's only victory.
"Back for more."
Zol watched her, unsmiling. Nona offered a fierce grin and shrugged. She had practiced the Torka move Zol favored, and paid close attention as the Ice Triber threw the rest of Grey Class around. They closed, feet making a dozen rapid adjustments before either laid hand upon the other. Nona braced, held her core tight, body low, all counters to the throws Zol liked to use. Zol's hand gripped her habit just above her breast. Nona reached for the elbow, sinking lower still to resist the throw. But Zoe let her grip slide, her other arm fluttering past Nona's defense in a slow and fluid motion that should have been easy to intercept, but wasn't. Both Zoe's hands reached Nona's face. Nona clung to the elbow of one but hadn't the strength to stop the larger girl. Zoe didn't punch. The lack of speed that had fooled Nona meant there wasn't much power in the blow. Rather, she achieved some combination of buffeting and slapping that left Nona stumbling past her, disoriented.
"Noital soft hands!" Sister Tallow called out. "Just because you have seen your foe fight one way against a previous opponent, do not let this make you overcommit to the counter-tactics. Variety is important. A predictable warrior, no matter how talented, will end up dead sooner than a less skilled warrior who can less easily be anticipated."
Zoe remained inscrutable. Nona would have preferred a sneer or a mocking smile. At least then she would have felt noticed. Sister Tallow saved the final humiliation for 6 day afternoon, ahead of the 7th day break, and their early morning departure for Verity as the new week began.
"Break!"
Sister Tallow snapped the word like a whip, and across Blade Hall pairs of novices stopped their sparring. Nona stood panting, grinning at Clara, who faked a stagger, though the sweat dripping from her fringe wasn't faked. They'd fought each other to a standstill with blinding combinations of punches, blocks, and snap kicks. Nona no longer lacked that much in height against Clara, and was perhaps a fraction quicker, but Clara made up for that fraction with low cunning and creativity.
"Zoe!"
Sister Tallow pointed at Shazal's ward, and Nona groaned, thinking they were to be skewered yet again on the sharp point of the girl's versatility. She had already been left eating sand on at least 4 occasions over the past 3 days. But Zoe simply nodded and walked to the main doors, opening one and leaning out. A moment later she was walking back, with Yisht at her heels. Yisht followed Zoe into the novices' midst, where she stood surveying them with dead eyes set above raw and prominent cheekbones. She wore her usual black coat, black leather belts beneath it, slung across a tunic that might once have been yellowish, now gone to brown with dirt and age. Sister Tallow crossed to stand beside the bodyguard.
"Yisht Rani here is a warrior of some renown, whose sword commands a high price. I'd asked her to demonstrate her martial skills this afternoon. Unarmed, of course. I'd rather there were survivors to take to the cultus."
Nona started to raise her hand to volunteer. A fire burned in her, and that fire wanted to see Yisht bleed. But something in the woman's shark-dead eyes made her hesitate. She found her hand trembling, and realized that what held her back was fear.
"Who's she going to fight?"
asked Darla, face still red from her bout with Jula. She stood a head taller than Yisht, and thicker in both body and limb.
"All of you,"
Sister Tallow said, as if it were a stupid question.
"Who first?"
Darla rarely knew when to stop.
"Together."
The novices, 12 in all, lined up, ready and eager to attack. Zoe positioned herself at the rear of the group, and Nona fell back to join her.
"What are you doing?"
Clara hissed, as Yisht took her position close to the wall and set her blades against the stonework.
"This is going to be fun!"
"Sister Tallow isn't stupid," Nona hissed back. "This woman's dangerous. I want to see how she fights. Be careful against her. I mean it."
"Come,"
Yisht beckoned her opponents forward. Darla, Ara, and Ketty were first to reach her, the others having to crowd in around the sides or wait their turn. Yisht ducked into Darla, evading her blow. The big girl's momentum carried her over Yisht's shoulder and on into the wall. In the meantime, Darla's hefty body flying through the air provided a shield, beneath which Yisht continued to move, emerging at a surprising angle just in time to catch Ara's wrist in one hand and deflect Ketty's kick with the other. Once she was caught, Ara's speed meant little.
Controlled as she was by the desire not to have her wrist broken, she had no option rather than to allow Yisht to steer her into the wall. Alata moved in with Lini, the dark girl landing a heavy punch into Yisht's ribs as she spun with Ara, the pale girl attempting to grapple Yisht's legs and catching one of them. Sister Talo had not spent long on teamwork, as red sisters are most likely to be called on to act alone. But she had drilled them on working together against a superior foe. Lini was following those instructions, making herself vulnerable but isolating a limb. If others did the same, the fight should be a short one. Yisht seemed untroubled by Alata's punch, and smacked her elbow into the girl's neck. The Ice Tribe moved quickly but lacked Hanska's speed. Somehow, though, she deflected another kick from Ketty, turning it on her shoulder, and caught Clara's arm as a punch cracked in towards her face. "She knows," Nona said it to herself, but Zol grunted an affirmation beside her. Yisht seemed to anticipate every attack, and end up positioned to defeat it even though the Hanska novices were considerably faster than her. In 3 short seconds, 3 more girls were on the sand. Jula, Katja, and Ruli. None of them keen to get up again. Darla and Ara lay stunned at the base of the wall. Lini had Yisht's foot on her throat, and had released the other leg. Ketty, with her legs swept away, landed heavily on her back. Nona leapt in over Alata's collapse, Zol following behind. Shelar and Croy closing along the wall from opposite directions. Clara still trying to kick even as Yisht twisted her wrist. Yisht released Clara, already off balance and falling, and reached out, catching Shelar's arm while having her other arm caught by Croy, advancing on the left. With this support, Yisht lifted up both legs, a kick to Clara's chest propelling her into Zol's path. Nona, already in the air and under gravity's control, found herself sailing towards Yisht's outstretched foot. With both arms crossed before her to cushion the blow, Nona crashed into Yisht's foot, and a moment later everyone seemed to be falling. By the time Nona rose from the sand clutching her ribs, Yisht had somehow contrived to smash Shelar into Croy, leaving neither fit to fight on. Clara lay behind Nona now, struggling to heave breath back into her lungs. And Zol? Zol landed, having leapt over Clara. She stood ready to strike, as Yisht twisted out from beneath Croy and Shelar. Zol had her arm crooked, ready to punch the exposed back of the warrior's neck. Yisht raised a hand, acknowledging defeat, and Zol stepped back, her blow unstruck. All around them, novices lay in the sand, 10 in all. Several, Clara included, were in the process of getting up, ready to rejoin the fray, but more than half weren't getting up any time soon, Ara among them.
"The first novices to touch the far wall are selected for the cultus matches," Sister Talo spoke in a conversational tone, and for a moment no one fully registered her words.
Clara was the first to start scrambling towards the door. Jula had got to all fours just in front of her, and Clara used her to lever herself up, pushing Jula's face into the sand as she did so. She took off, though she hadn't taken the trouble to finish standing up first, so it was part crawl, part stumble, rather than actual running. Zol set off next, quickly overtaking Clara. Alata got up, clutching her throat, and started to run. Croy tripped Lini as she tried to rise and staggered to her feet. Nona watched them. Did she want to go back? Did she want to join the fight under the cultus roof, with partner Reeve watching on? To put coin in his purse as Verity's wealthy bet on which way the blood would spatter? She thought of Raymel Taxis. Would he be watching? Would it shame him more if she didn't even rank among the convent's offering? Or did she want to look into his eyes and show him she had no fear? Jula had got to her knees again, spitting sand. With 2 of the 3 places in the fist round gone to Clara and Zol, the last would be hers. Nona found herself running. Her mouth shouted a sorry as she shot past Jula, but her legs just pumped harder.
Chapter 30 The cultus had a smell all its own. Nona had not remarked it on her arrival with the child-taker, but now, among the many stinks of verity, it was the particular smell of the place that brought Sida's ghost to stand beside her. Sweat, blood, sawdust, sewage, old beer, stale wine. The cultus could be inhaled and known in a single breath from floor to rafter. The five competing girls from Grey Class, accompanied by sisters Tallow, Flint, and Rock, were afforded a corner of the main hall in which to train. Partness's children had set out chairs and a long table to which the cultus cooks brought the midday meal and periodic refreshments. This ensured that the nuns and novices would not have to mix with the cultus's various inhabitants. The remainder of Grey Class watched from a roped area in the corner, opposite the one where ales were sold on fight nights. Sister Kettle kept watch over them. Yisht came too, but strode the hall like a predator in search of prey, with no regard to boundaries. Nona felt on display the whole time, more so than if they had sat at table with the ring fighters, apprentices, and bonded children for their meal. She knew that every crack and chink in the ceiling high above her had an eye to it. There would be new kings to rule that particular roost. Regal and Denham would long since have joined the ranks of Partness's apprentices, but nothing else would have changed up there among the sacks and dust of the attic. Several young men from the apprentice hall lounged at the main doors, watching with an amused indolence, though they must surely have seen the same spectacle on several occasions. Even the ring fighters seemed to find excuses to cross back and forth across the hall more times than seemed reasonable. Gretcher passed by once, the grizzled gerent fighter who had fought in the second ring that first night when Nona and Sida had watched Raymel at work. She offered the novices a gap-toothed grin.
"She's huge," Clara whispered beside Nona.
Nona just nodded. The woman's arms were as thick as Nona's whole body, banded by tattoos patterned in red and black like a winding serpent. Two other gerent fighters paused to watch the novices work through their cactus, each a towering mass of muscle, one with what looked to be deliberate facial scars, making something demonic of his smile, though the eyes above lacked malice. The other, balding, his grey hair cut to a stubble, scowled as though he had happily eat a novice whole given half a chance. A younger man sauntered by four times, humming to himself behind a sardonic smile.
"That's Aegon," Alata said after the first pass. "The Cultus's newest ring fighter. He sailed from Dern."
"How do you know?" Croy's eyes lingered on the doorway through which the man had gone. Nona supposed he had been handsome in a lean, dark manner.
"Everyone knows," Claire said before a snap of Sister Tallow's fingers set them all back to their tasks.
The appointed hour approached. There were no bells in the Cultus, but people began to gather even so. Sister Tallow broke training and allowed the novices to watch, the watchers.
"Who's that?"
Clara pointed across to where Partness Reeve stood, wine goblet in hand, amid a collection of ring fighters and apprentices. "The owner." Nona had never quite managed to hate Partness, though she knew she should. Partness Reeve waited, talking with his fight masters and trainers as he watched his guests from the convent. Nona knew both the fight masters, lean grey men in their dark cultus greens. A woman stood to one side of the group, or perhaps it was a man, hidden in cowl and robe. The nuns' glances strayed towards the figure in quiet moments. On the other side, a man Nona thought she recognized. He looked small compared to the fighters clustered around Partness, though perhaps he missed 6 foot by only a few inches. He seemed out of place in sealskin trousers and a shirt stitched from the fur of many small animals. The tular at his hip and the scars across both cheeks finally hooked the right memory and drew it to the surface. The man had intervened once when the attic's bully, Denham, had caught Nona off guard. He'd said he was a ring fighter. Tarkax, that was his name. At last children began to descend from the attic under the watchful eye of the giant Maya, who played mother for the Cultus.
You're up first, Nona. Sister Tallow nodded towards the ring. Don't break anyone.
Nona climbed up onto the platform and vaulted over the ropes that made the rectangle in which she would fight. The fact they called it a ring still irritated her. A blonde boy of no great size clambered in at the opposite corner looking nervous. Nona looked around, finding that the elevation of less than 2 yards offered a profoundly different perspective. She looked down on the nuns, on Zol, Clara, Croy, and Alata, even the tallest of the gerents she could face nearly eye to eye. Gretcha, standing close to the ropes, gave her a grin and banged her barrel chest with one huge fist.
"Fight!"
barked one of Partners's fight masters, and the boy came forward, fists raised. Nona leaned back and kicked him as he closed the last yard. Her heel hammered into his solar plexus, and he folded up with an "ooh" made by all the air leaving his lungs at once, and collapsed onto his side on the boards. Nona glanced around, wondering if she were the victim of some kind of trick. The novices watching seemed just as surprised.
"Next!"
the fightmaster shouted. Gretcha stooped and reached in a long, muscular arm to haul the boy out beneath the bottom rope, as a hefty, red-faced girl clambered in to take his place. Her kalta shift dirty with the attic's dust and cobwebs. This one absorbed a couple of punches and took a kick to the back of the knee to put down. She tried to rise twice, despite Nona's elbow strikes to the back, but not a third time. The next was a dark-haired girl, younger than Nona. She tried to dodge Nona's first punch and had some speed to her, but not enough. Nona's fist crunched into her nose, and the girl staggered back with blood sheeting down her lips and chin, then burst into tears. Gretcha lifted her bodily over the ropes with one hand, frowning, though more in compassion than disgust. Nona fought 6 opponents in a row before Sister Tallow called her out of the ring. On the first day, Zol, Clara, and Nona found themselves pitched against a long succession of Kalta's trainees. Trainees meant attic children purchased by Partners and set to chores by Maya until it became clear what their potential might be. Nona suspected that beyond running laps and watching fights, the training the trainees received amounted to little more than feeding up. The fact that many Hunska and Gerent didn't come into their full speed or show significant size until their teens meant that Partners didn't want to waste his fightmaster's time on the children he bought by the dozen each year. Nona saw the fightmasters taking notes, writing down Partners' muttered comments. It wasn't the novices being forged here. Partners was getting to see what metal his purchases had, though why he couldn't use his own apprentices for that, Nona had no idea. Zol fought the trainees with brutal efficiency, seeming intent on putting each onto the boards with the minimum number of blows. Yisht came to the ring for Zol's fights, and barked at her in the ice tongue. Commands, encouragements, threats? Nona never knew. Nona found herself giving her opponents a chance, letting them swing, punishing them for mistakes rather than for effort. Clara seemed to revel in the chance to hit and not be hit, using her opponents as practice dummies, peppering them with dozens of punches as if seeing how many times she could hit them before they fell. After her first half-dozen, finished by a dull-looking giant of a farm boy, she jumped out, spattered with blood, and grinning like a lunatic. They each faced a second batch of 6 opponents after lunch. These were older, showing more signs of actual training, or at least more muscle and stamina. Some of the Hunskers were half-bloods at least. None presented a challenge. Come evening, the crowd swelled with more fighters and others, whose right to be there seemed written only in the richness of the cloth across their backs. Partners put down his goblet and his chicken leg, moving in for closer observation. If he recognized Nona, his eyes let none of it show as they studied the length of her. Nona ignored him, waiting in her corner for the third set of opponents. The second of Nona's 6 opponents was the first of the day to hit her. A tall boy with long hair blacker than a raven's wing, and a scar that gave him a permanent half-smile. He let her land a couple of punches, clearly relying on what he had learned by watching her earlier in the day, knowing she wouldn't go for the kill. He disguised his speed and grunted when hit, staggering back. When Nona came in to put him on the ground, he struck with the speed of a Hunska Prime, a straight punch for which his body gave no warning, aimed at her throat. Nona dug deep and managed to take the blow on the side of her face, spinning away, spitting blood. She fetched up against the ropes and found the boy watching her, his scar smile no longer lopsided.
"Ouch!"
She wiped at her mouth, her hand coming away scarlet, and offered a red grin in return. The remainder of that fight was short, vicious, and one-sided. Nona shouted, "Next!" before the fightmaster got a chance to. Her final opponent made the board shake as he stepped over the ropes. A dark-haired gerent with muscle heaped along the thick bones of his arms. He was a handsome boy, a couple of years Nona's senior, and popular too, to judge from the cheer among the attic children, though in truth for the past few hours they'd been cheering anyone who could put up more than a moment's resistance.
"Hello," the boy grinned down at Nona. "I'll try not to spoil your face."
Meaty fist smacked into broad palm. Nona sprinted at him, dropped to her back and skidded between his legs. She gained her feet long before he had a chance to turn, but he never did. The foot she planted between his thighs, arching up on her shoulders as she slid between his ankles, seemed to have been just as effective as Sister Tallow had promised it would be in her classes. The youth stood without motion, shoulders hunched, silent save for a fierce hissing sound. Then, with no warning, he fell first to his knees, then to the boards, coiled up and clutching his groin. Day two was given over to Blade. In the morning, Alata and Croy took to the ring, first with blunted knives and later with wooden swords, facing a small number of the very best trainees. The handsome gerent was among Alata's three opponents. He shot Nona a filthy look as he climbed in, gingerly this time. He lasted no longer with a sword in his hand. Alata parried a blow, ducked beneath a swing, and came up with her sword against his thick neck. The other bouts were similarly short, with no Kalta's trainees coming close to victory, though the Hunska boy who hit Nona did manage to score a knife mark against Croy before she sliced his throat.
"Now they'll try us against the apprentices,"
Croy said as she climbed down from the morning's final contest. She looked less than enthusiastic.
"You've seen it before?" Nona asked.
"We were here last year with Leany in the fist battles,"
Alata said.
"The Kaltas don't train their trainees worth a damn, but they do nothing but train their apprentices. No path or academia for them, just fighting. While we're in spirit class or grinding poisons, they're fighting. We get our fun in the trainee bouts. The Kaltas gets its revenge in the apprentice bouts."
The afternoon proved to be all that Alata promised. The apprentices came to the ring hardened by years of focused training. Alata, with her Hunska speed, won two rounds against two gerent apprentices, the first of them hulking redhead from Nona's attic days, Denim. He now loomed almost 8 foot in height, and his body looked ready to burst with the pressure of all the muscle heaped around his bones. When Alata spun inside his guard and thrust her wooden blade into his gut, he snatched it from her in one huge hand, and for a moment, Nona thought he would just reach out and crush her head. But the fightmaster's shouts reached him, and he flung both swords down before leaving the ring, cursing. Croy didn't win a single bout. She had a natural talent for swordplay, but just a touch of Hunska, and neither was enough to overcome the mismatch between her single year of sword and blade class and the apprentice's dedicated training over several years. It was Regal who first defeated Alata. The tall, sardonic boy Nona had known as King of the Attic was now a tall, sardonic young man, the mocking smile and watchful eyes unchanged. He proved both lightning fast and highly skilled, overcoming Alata's defense in a blinding exchange of parries, thrusts, and feints. Alata lost to all the Hunska apprentices, and one of the older gerents, too. Both girls returned to the convent that night with the record of their defeats written across them in lines of black bruising. Croy hobbled the last quarter mile of the Seren Way, and Alata looked spent by the time they reached the pillars. As they staggered off together towards the bathhouse, Nona wasn't sure either of the novices would make it to the pool.
"Your turn with the apprentices tomorrow,"
Alata offered as a parting shot. On the third and final day of the forging, Sister Tallow once again put Nona up first to meet the Kalta's challenge. The crowd had grown greater still. A sword fight can be difficult to see. It can be over quickly. And with wooden blades there is seldom any gore to entertain the masses. Fights without weapons are more of a spectacle. Everyone understands them, or can at least fool themselves into thinking they can. And blood will often flow.
"Learn something,"
Sister Tallow set Nona, moving towards the ring. "Not don't break them?" Nona glanced back. Sister Tallow gave one of her rare smiles.
"Try."
Nona vaulted over the ropes into her corner. A moment later, Regal climbed unhurriedly into his. The Kalta's children began to chant Regal's name, quietly at first, but rising in volume. And on every side the crowd edged closer. Where the trainees had fought in their Kalta shifts, still dusty from the attic, the apprentices fought only in thick, white loincloths, the women binding a heavy linen wrap around their chests. Tarkax, the ice triber, had moved closer to the ring, dwarfed by the gerent ringfighters behind him. He watched Nona with mild interest, as if waiting to be impressed. Yisht stood by his side, both of them muttering to each other with just a twitching of lips. Nona wondered what they would have to talk about. Perhaps just ice warriors sharing their contempt of corridor battle skills. But Ara had said Shazal had attended Thurin Taxus's ball, and Partness lay under the Taxus' thumb. If Tarkax was his creature, and Yisht was Shazal's... Regal raised a hand in salute, turning a full circle before letting his eyes come to rest on Nona. His habitual mocking smile broadened into something more sincere.
"Little Nona, you've grown."
"You remembered me. I'm touched." Nona couldn't help but smile back.
"I won't go easy on you, though."
Regal nodded grave for a moment. He stepped to the center of the ring, muttering through a fixed smile. His voice so low it barely reached her.
"You're remembered. Don't ever think otherwise. Children have short memories. Adults, long ones."
His eyes flicked to the left, and following his gaze, Nona saw, out at the back of the crowd, behind Partness, behind the rich in their furs and jewels, Raymel Taxus. His 9-foot frame wrapped in a mole-dark cape that couldn't hide the broadness of him. A silver circlet held his golden hair back from his brow, and the face beneath had changed. The veins on the right side of his neck stood black against his flesh, like tendrils of night rising from his cape. And something was amiss with his left eye, though at such a distance Nona couldn't tell what exactly. Perhaps it was just full of blood. Nona moved to face Regal at the center.
"He came to see me fight?"
Something in that two-toned stare had caught at Nona's guts like a cold hand, waking an old emotion, one she had never had much use for. Fear.
"He came to see you hurt,"
Regal said, shaking out his arms and rolling his head.
"You're going to hurt me?"
A snarl twisted at Nona's lip. Fire rising in her belly to drive out the unease.
"No, I'm going to beat you. Make sure you submit clearly and quickly so I have a good excuse for stopping. Next."
"Fight!"
The fightmaster's bark cut through the chanting.
"Next up is Denim. Do not let him get hold of you."
Regal struck as his lips closed on his last word. A swiveling kick aimed directly at Nona's chest.
She slowed the world, stretching each second into an age. But however deep she dug, Regal's foot refused to slow. Nona both blocked and deflected, but against a grown man, neither made much difference. Her blocking arm was simply driven against her chest, transmitting the force of the kick. Nona felt her feet lift from the ground, watched the frozen faces of the crowd as she flew, and bent as the ropes caught her in a rough embrace. The rebound took her to the floor, where she pushed herself quickly to her feet, fighting for breath, her body a mass of hurt. Regal didn't press his attack. He stood relaxed, wearing his old smile as the cheers rose around him.
"You're quicker than me,"
the words came out in a pained wheeze. The fact hurt Nona more than her lungs did.
"I am," Regal nodded. "But you'll likely grow faster, and I'm as good as I'll get."
Nona adopted the blade stance. Few Hunska reached their full potential before 14, but even so it shocked her to find someone so obviously swifter than herself.
"Fight!"
Nona advanced, snapping jump kicks at Regal, testing his defense with jabs, but hitting only air. His longer reach kept her at bay, and combined with his speed, left her at a loss for how to proceed. Regal made the decision for her with a lightning-fast leg sweep. Nona leapt above it by the narrowest of margins, throwing herself not just up but forward towards Regal's shoulder as the rotation turned him from her. It was a trap. Regal had lured her in and his elbow rose to meet her. In midair, Nona was a slave to events already set in motion. She twisted and raised her arms to block. Regal's elbow knocked her arms aside and hit the side of her head. Nona found herself on the boards, the roaring of the crowd faint against a ringing in her ears, as if Battelle were being hammered in warning. She lifted her head and the world spun around her, the looming shape of her opponent revolving with it.
"Surrender!"
a harsh whisper as Regal approached. Nona lifted her hand, fingers splayed. The blood roar of the crowd missed a beat, then fractured into both cheers and jeers. Nona rolled to her back, panting, fighting nausea, watching Regal's back as he returned to his corner. Nona didn't see Clara's or Zol's fights. She heard the crowd howling. She heard laughter, hooting, gasps. But all that time she lay on a table in what looked to be the apprentice hall. Her head ringing, exhaustion running through her, though her fight had lasted only moments. Sister Flint gave her sugar and water and told her to rest. Sister Rock leaned over her, a frown on her brutal face, hands surprisingly tender as she pulled Nona's eyes wide and waved a finger before them.
"You'll be all right, child. No more fighting today, though."
Perhaps an hour later, though it seemed both far longer and far less, Clara came limping to sit on the table.
"We're both done."
"You look awful." Nona sat up. She felt much better. Certainly better than Clara looked, her eye blackening, lip split.
"You should see the other girl."
Clara grinned, teeth red.
"You beat an apprentice?" "What, no? Are you mad?" She pounded me.
"I meant Zol." Nona looked around. She was in the apprentice hall on the dining table to which she had delivered dozens of meals from the Kaltas kitchens during her time there.
"Where is she?"
"Sister Flint's taken her back to the convent." Clara grinned again.
"On a mule!"
She touched her lip, wincing.
"That girl doesn't know when to quit. She did manage to hurt one of them, though. Talitha, the tall Hunska with the braids, remember?"
Nona didn't, but she nodded.
"She had Zol in a lock. No way she could escape. But Zol kicked her in the face anyway."
Clara mimed the impact.
"Brilliant!"
"And then?" Nona asked.
"I think she broke Zol's arm."
Clara shrugged. Sister Tallow appeared at the doorway, glimpses of the throng behind her, the rumble of them filling the hall. Someone caught her attention before she could turn into the room.
"Nope! We're returning to the convent!"
Nona couldn't hear the other party above the noise outside.
"That's really not my concern, Reeve."
"I don't care what he wants."
Sister Tallow made to turn away, but a tall figure closed on her.
Partness Reeve reaching out for her arm before thinking better of it, and withdrawing his hand as she stared at it.
"I don't know what you've heard, sister, but he's not some street show villain. He's the heir to one of Empire's oldest families, for ancestors' sake. A refined young man of considerable education."
Now Sister Tallow's voice fell to a mutter, and Partness's rose in response.
"Many young men have appetites. Such lapses are unfortunate, but..."
Sister Tallow stepped backwards into the room and shut the door in Partness's face.
"Are you fit to travel, Nona? We're going back."
Nona slipped from the table. The sound, the smell of the place, both of them filled her head with images. Raymel Taxus in the ring, seen through an attic slit, bathed in the many-tongued voice of the crowd. Raymel Taxus on his knees, blood spurting from the lacerations to his neck. Sida on the ground, her arm at broken angles. Raymel Taxus watching from a crimson eye, black fingers running beneath the skin of his neck. She shook her head to clear the visions.
"I want to fight."
"Sister Rock says you took quite a blow to the head. There's no shame in leaving now."
Sister Tallow crossed the room to stand above Nona. She took Nona's chin and angled her face, eyes narrowed in inspection.
"I feel better."
It wasn't a lie. She did feel better. Not good, but better.
"Your opponent is ready," Sister Tallow said. "There's much you could learn from him. But they would be rough lessons, and perhaps you've been taught enough today."
"I'll fight."
Sister Tallow chewed her cheek, frowned, then released Nona's chin.
"The world is a dangerous place. We do you no favours if we hide your weakness from you. You can fight."
She turned and walked towards the doorway. Nona followed. Not since she felled Raymel Taxus had Nona been up close with someone as massive as Denim. The apprentice seemed to fill half the ring, and she had to crane her neck to look up at his face.
"I'm going to snap you in two, little girl."
Denim curled his lip. He had the arms to do it too, without effort. He had grown, if anything, less handsome over the 2 years, and he hadn't been pleasing to look on in the first place. His face, reddened in anger, sported a nasty collection of pustules and the beginnings of a sparse ginger beard. More spots had broken out along his arms, and his back was thick with them.
"You shouldn't oil your muscles,"
Clara from just behind Nona's corner.
"It's bad for your skin."
Nona had to put a hand to her mouth to hide a grin as Denim's face contorted in rage. Raymel Taxus had moved closer to the ring, towering above the merchants and lords he now stood among. In all the crowd, only one man seemed prepared to stand beside Raymel, and an empty area had opened around the pair of them, despite the press of people. The other man stood skeletally thin in a robe of sky-blue silk, his head small upon the long column of his neck, eyes pale, dark hair scraped across his head in long, thinning locks. He seemed more interested in Raymel than in the fight, constantly glancing at the giant to his left. For his part, Raymel kept his gaze on Nona. His left eye had no white or iris, just a black pupil surrounded by scarlet. Nona could almost imagine something inhuman watched her through it. The right eye was all Raymel, though, blue and full of malice.
"Fight!"
At the fight master's shout, Nona rushed forward. Denim moved like a stone sinking in thickest honey, barely flinching before Nona delivered her kick to his belly. She might as well have kicked a wall. She spun beneath a huge and questing hand to land a series of punches to the nerve centers of the major muscles in his right thigh, following with a vicious kick to the back of his knee. The gerent reacted with such sloth that Nona stayed to drive three more punches into the most vulnerable areas of his left leg, blows that should leave the big muscle of the thigh dead and useless for the best part of an hour. Finally, she skipped away from a lumbering swing of his arm. "Even Regal can hit harder than that." Nona had expected Denim to collapse, but he came on unhindered, and she had to dive aside to avoid the widespread of his arms. Spinning beneath his guard again, she focused an attack on his right leg, hitting hard enough to hurt her hands, but the thick slabs of muscle seemed impervious. She kicked at his kneecap with all her strength and leapt away from another attempt to seize her. Nona stood back, catching her breath. Denim weighed at least 4 times what she did, and she lacked the physical strength to hurt him. Punches that would floor another novice he hardly noticed.
"You're not the first Hanska I've fought, holy girl."
Nona pursed her lips and came forward again, weaving around the hands grasping for her. Denim kept his legs tight, wise to the groin strike from her previous fights. Even so, Nona hammered a trio of punches into the fullest-looking part of Denim's loincloth, then rolled away. The gerent's roar joined and temporarily drowned out that of the crowd, his face shaded more deeply crimson than seemed possible without actually bleeding. But he came on, undeterred. Nona kept at it, dancing around Denim's clumsy lunges, peppering the lower part of his body with her best punches and kicks. But it gained her no advantage, and she felt the slow but inexorable rise of exhaustion. No Hanska can dance between the moments for too long before their body fails, and Nona had already had a trying day. Even as she ducked and wove, Raymel Taxus occupied the corner of her eye. At each break when she won clear and waited for Denim to catch up, she risked glances towards her enemy. He wore an ugly smile now, anticipating the moment when her resources would be so drained as to allow Denim to snag her. The Neuguin assassins and corrupting the ancestor's high priest must have lightened even the Taxus purse. But how much had it cost to have Denim swear to break her back when he caught her, or put out her eyes with his thick fingers? A sovereign? Nona wouldn't be surprised to learn it was pennies, or perhaps just the cost of a polite request. Another round of bouncing from the ropes, from one corner to the next. Nona felt herself slowing. Even Denim, crimson and sweat-soaked, seemed to be running out of rage-fueled energy. Still, in the tight confines of the ring, she had little doubt that the gerent would eventually catch her, unless his heart exploded. The general roar of 100 voices converged now on a singular cycle of oohs and ahs, like the watchers of a ball game, as Nona escaped Denim's outstretched fingers by ever narrower margins.
"Enjoy your running!"
Raymel's shout reached her through a lull in the crowd's voice. He had moved closer, only a few yards from the ropes now.
"You won't be doing any more after today."
The taunt stopped Nona dead, right in Denim's path. Her eyes flickered from Denim to Raymel. The man had killed Saida as surely as if he had throttled her himself. And here he stood in his riches, waiting for his hireling to maim her. Common sense told Nona to slip from the ring, retreat to the convent's safety. But a red anger rose in her, drowning out the voice of reason. The ginger gerent howled his bloodlust and thrust a hand towards her. Nona sank into the moment and timed her jump. She landed with legs bent, 1 foot against the back of Denim's hand, letting his momentum carry them both forward. As he whipped his hand up, trying both to dislodge and catch her, Nona straightened her legs, driving off the broad back of Denim's hand. To the onlooker, it would look as if he literally batted her into the air with a fumbled attempt to seize her. Airborne, Nona sailed across the upper rope, staring at her target. Raymel had time to lift his head and start to move his arms, but caught by surprise, he had no chance of stopping her. Twisting in the air, Nona brought her feet to the fore and hammered both into Raymel's chest. She caught him around the back of the head to keep her place. Immediately, long before his hands could reach her, something else took hold. As if some unseen and clawed hand had sunk its talons into her mind, cutting through memories, letting emotion bleed out. She felt them. She felt whatever it was that now shared Raymel's skull,
the passengers that had ridden him back from his long stay trapped on the border between life and death. They lurked under his skin, watched her from his crimson eye. Nona and Ramil remained in contact for only a split second, but some instinct told her that although both eyes lighted on her, only the red eye truly saw her, and more, it recognized her. Something woke inside Nona as her gaze locked with whatever lay hidden inside the ring fighter's skull. Their communion lasted only an instant, but her speed drew it out into an age. A deep and twisting sensation enveloped her, half pain, half sickness. A dozen different thoughts crowded through the small fragment of time that Nona had left for thinking. She should spring away. She should kill him. She should mark him. Nona's hands decided for her. For Sida. She plunged her talons into Ramel's throat, drawing them across the thickness of his neck, then sprang away, leaping backwards over his rising hands. She tumbled in the air and landed on both feet just before the ring, arms spread for balance, but looking as if inviting applause. A shadow fell over her. Glancing up, she saw a hand big enough to engulf and crush her head, and behind it, Denim, crimson and furious, leaning over the ropes to snatch hold of her. For once, Nona had no time to move. But, close as Denim was, Sister Talla reached her first. She caught Denim's wrist in a pincered grip, taking his little finger in her other hand. A moment later, he was on his knees in the ring above them, crying for release in a voice hoarse with agony. Sister Rock drew Nona away towards the main doors. To the audience, to Denim, perhaps even to the nuns, the whole exchange would have looked like an accident. Nona swept out of the ring by the gerent, crashing into a member of the crowd, springing away. Half pushed, half carried to the exit, Nona kept her eyes on Ramil Taxus, the blue-robed man fussing about him. Something was wrong. Blades that could sink 6 inches into a stone wall seemed to have been turned aside, as if Ramil's flesh held something inimical to their nature. Instead of a devastating wound, they appeared to have left just a shallow cut, hardly parting the skin. With the red tide of her anger ebbing, Nona realized that she could have been standing there with gory hands before 100 witnesses to the murder of a lord's son. Even the sisters would have turned against her. If she had managed to escape the hall, then the Emperor's soldiers would have hunted from the Marne beaches to the Scythrol borders for her. And yet, still, some part of her knew disappointment. Ramil, for his part, ignored the Academy man before him and stared at Nona in turn, with his scarlet eye and the blue. He kept one hand clasped to his throat, the smallest trickles of blood just starting to seep between his fingers. And as each of them stared at the other, that sharp nausea twisted in Nona's gut once more. Chapter 31.
What do they even eat?
What? Nona looked back at Clara, next behind her in the queue, waiting for Benta to open the gate and let them down the stairs to the poisoner's cave.
What do they find to eat out there?
Clara asked.
Who?
The ice tribes. They can't just munch on ice. They hunt. Nona's father had hunted on the ice.
What do they hunt?
White bear, hula, lynx, that sort of thing.
To eat?
My dad sold their pelts.
What did the bears eat?
They came down into the margins and forage.
Talking about the deep tribes... Zoe said her people roam 1,000 miles north.
Huh? Nona frowned.
Fish, I think. And since when do you speak to Zoe? Fish? Isn't it all supposed to be frozen?
But there's sea underneath, Nona said.
Miles underneath? How do...
The clanking of the key in the lock ended the discussion. Benta hauled the gate open and glared at the novices until they started moving. Clara claimed that Benta's dead white skin and the alarming, unnatural blue of her eyes were the lingering after-effect of one of Sister Apple's poisons, and her position as assistant was a kind of compensation.
But Nona had it from Sister Kettle that such coloration wasn't uncommon if you walked the corridor for 1,000 miles east, and that Benta would be taking the headdress next year as a sister of discretion. Sister Apple stood waiting as Grey Class filed in behind Benta. Heavy curtains hung over the 3 shaft windows tunneled out to the cliff wall, and a shifting gloom filled the place. The 3 workbenches had been positioned against the walls, chairs stacked on top, lanterns set between, leaving a large, empty space. Even the poisoner's desk had been cleared of its usual vials, jars of pickled organs and various oddments. Nona stood with the others, uneasy in the flickering shadows. At long last they might perhaps learn something other than poisons. Even so, Nona didn't peel the wax from her fingertips. It never paid to let your guard down in Shade Class, and anything you touched could be one of Sister Apple's little traps. Light is the interloper. Sister Apple spoke in the low voice of someone who is certain that they will be listened to. Those of you who have heard me give this speech before, attend to your training. She waved at the group and 4 or 5 of the novices back towards the rear of the chamber, where the darkness lay thickest. Nona caught Leany's smile as the novice ran her hands up across her body from thighs to chest to face, and somehow the night seemed to follow, her skin, usually nearly as pale as Benta's, growing hard to see, as if the lantern's shuddering light could find no purchase on her. Beside her, Alata's dark brown skin seemed to shout its presence in comparison. A sick sensation crawled up around Nona's stomach, the same feeling she had been experiencing since the Kaltus forging. In the days since her return, it had only got worse. Perhaps Raymil had poisoned her somehow when she had cut him, or had her poisoned earlier in the day. Maybe that's what he had been there to watch, her dying in agony. If so, he had miscalculated the dose. Nona had told no one but Ara and Clara. Ara had wondered if it might not be an enchantment. The Noi Guin were said to be able to lay Marjal spells that would see the flesh rot from a strong man within a week. Clara had laughed and said that most girls of their age felt the same symptoms every month, and to get used to it. Both suggested going to the Abbess, but Nona wouldn't hear of it. If any of the nuns had realized that Nona's collision with Raymil was other than accidental, or that she had tried to kill him, they didn't appear to have told the Abbess. Nona wasn't about to, either. Abbess Glass had endured horrors, narrowly escaping an even worse fate the last time Nona enraged the Taxus family. And now Nona had gone and cut the throat of Thurin Taxus's firstborn son again, albeit not as deeply as she wanted to. The fight was hers to finish. Light is a temporary kindness. Nona found that the poisoner had taken up her theme and was waxing lyrical. She shook herself and tried to pay attention. It is made new in the flame of a candle or the sun's hot eye. Before it comes, there is darkness. After it leaves, there will be darkness. The night is patient, endlessly so, and shadow. Shadow is the war, the wound, where the two contest, where the light bleeds. The poisoner paused to tuck a stray coil of red hair back into her headdress. Look around you. Shadow is never still. Each shadow has 2 makers, the light and that which blocks the light. Both move. And if we leave this cave of dancing flames and restless novices, still we find no shadow without motion. The sun moves, Abeth moves, clouds come and go. To conceal yourself, you must understand this motion. You must learn when to be still and when to move. In shade, I will teach you patience and stealth. We will study them until they become your religion, and Sister Wheel marches down my stairs to call you heretics. There may be times when your life depends on your ability to stay hidden, or when someone else's life depends on the subtlety with which you insinuate yourself past a defense. If you take the red or the grey, this will certainly be the case. But however you serve the ancestor, know that both patience
and the talent for passing unnoticed will prove among the most valuable skills you're taught as novices." The poisoner stood dark before them, framed by the golden and beaded light, where it threaded the smallest of gaps around the curtain's edges. "For today, I want you to find a place to sit. Seek your patience as Mistress